This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I am coming in for a few hours tomorrow, not too long. But as I said last week, we've got one of the grand old men in the IT department, and he's actually on the road to retirement, and we're trying to get a few things done before he retires. I also have a bit of excitement while recording in the car today. I normally have a foam stand, kind of a foam rubber with some strategically placed wedges in it that I can jam in between the windshield and my dashboard to hold my recorder when I'm recording. And I left that at home today because it needs a bit of repair, and I didn't actually put the repairs on my list of things to do. Consequently, I didn't get the repairs done. I didn't bring in the holder with me, so I have improvised. And I'm really hoping that this does not fall down in my lap. Hopefully the sound will be okay today. I don't think it's actually bumping into anything, so I don't think it's going to be going bang, 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 but if you hear some odd noises today, it's probably because it is not in the normal holder. Anyways, it is episode 46. We are closing in on a year. I don't know if we've really accomplished anything with me flapping my gums for a whole year, but at least it's a goal. It's been a good week this week. There was some excitement this week. We closed the month of January this week at my main client, and that was pretty exciting. There was one night this week I was actually sitting at my computer at about 4:15 in the morning trying to figure out why some things hadn't run, but you know what? We got it all done. It's fine. And we actually ended the week kind of on a high note. We had been trying to get a certain piece of functionality going for weeks and weeks and weeks. We had discussed it. Yesterday, the Lord helped us talk to the right person who gave us a piece of information, and then we worked on some other things and worked through some whispers, and the whispers led us down a few paths, and by the time it was all said and done, bada bing, bada boom, it is working. So that is very cool when you can kind of feel like you've gotten to a closure point. I have another application I'm going to start speccing out tomorrow to see how fast we can get it up, and I'm probably only going to work about 3 or 4 hours. In other news, the beta readers do have the beta books, and they are reading, and several have responded favorably already to it, so people seem to be enjoying it. That's always nice. I did have a bit of an adventure when I went to actually mail the beta books. I still don't know how I did it. It was snowing, somewhat hard, but not really, really hard. It was a little cool. And I was going down one road, and I turned onto another road, and I guess because the snow was built up and I probably wasn't paying as close attention as I could, I actually ran my car right into the curb. I mean, it went wham! And my car kind of lifted up and flopped down, and of course, then I'm going down the road thinking, okay, is everything is okay? Is everything okay? Is everything okay? Is everything okay? And suddenly I hear flop, 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 flop. Oh, rats. Thankfully, the road that I was on was a really wide road with really wide shoulders, wide enough that I could pull my entire car off the road. And I did that and got out and hauled everything out of my trunk because I have an internet service provider business, and so I have tons of stuff in my trunk. Got it stuffed in my back seat so I could get to the tire, got the tire changed. I bent the rim on the tire when I hit, so I had to get a new rim, which they didn't have at the tire shop because I drive a Chevy Prism and they're small rims. But, you know, you go to a junkyard, they've got the tire, da-da-da. You just take it a step at a time. The Lord helps. Everything works out. It's okay. So that was a little excitement. I am still working on the 21-day challenge of a complaint-free world, going 21 days without complaining, gossiping, or criticizing, with no grace this time. I had done it 21 days with a bit of grace. This time it's no grace. I have to say, there was one comment that I made on Monday morning after all the snow as I was driving to work, and frankly, I don't know if it was a complaint. I was actually going down a street that was fairly well cleared. I turned onto another street that wasn't cleared, that was packed snow and fairly slick, and I looked at it and I went, whoa, this is bad. And then I thought, okay, is that a complaint or an observation or... And I'm not sure. I'm just not sure. So, aside from that, so what I'm saying at this point is, I think I am, let's see, this would be day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. This is day 10 or day 11. If, whoa, this is bad, was not a complaint. If it is a complaint, then I'm back on day 3. But I may just keep trucking along, and then if I get to 21 days, maybe I'll just go another week or something. Anyway, so that's going along fine. Today, enough small talk, moving on. Today, I'd like to talk a little bit about a very cool, I think it's cool, a very cool new area of investigation in science having to do with expression of genes and having to do with adaptation of the species. A couple of episodes ago, I talked about the latest investigations in DNA and how DNA works, and we talked about protein encoding genes, how that they aren't the only thing that's going on in the DNA. In the DNA, there are also switches that turn the genes on and off. Talked about how there are HOX genes, which are the body plan genes, that actually are the same for all land animals and insects. There's the same 40 genes, and just different pieces of them create different types of animals. Very cool stuff. Have remained basically unchanged in hundreds of millions of years, according to the scientists. Very cool stuff. And I mentioned at that time that I had heard rumors of some things, and based on the rumors that I had heard, my guess was going to be that in due season, the scientists would find out that, in fact, adaptation of the species is not limited to just random mutations of the genetic code. Back when Darwin was making his proposals, there was actually a competing idea with how species adapted. It was put forward by a guy whose last name I think was Lamarck. And his theory was that animals' actions and behaviors and their experiences could actually alter over time their physical characteristics. So his big example that he used was that the reason that the giraffe has a long neck is because the giraffe liked the leaves up in the trees, and so he would always stretch his neck to try to get to the leaves, and in the process of stretching his neck, he then changed his characteristics such that when he or she had babies, those babies had longer necks. This was pretty quickly just thrown out in favor of Darwin's theory of evolution. From the reports that I've read, they say that Darwin was actually a better scientist and made more sense to a lot of people with his idea of random mutations causing differences in breeding, which then led to adaptation of the species. I would just, as an observation, say that Darwin's theory might have been more appealing because it allowed for the exclusion of any kind of designer or influence, but that's okay. So there was, at the time of Darwin, when things got started, these two competing ideas of how species adapted, that some of the adaptation was done by mutations, and another camp said, no, the adaptation is done by environmental factors and experiences and actions of the individual unit of the species. Well, what is very interesting is there is a whole new field of study that now seems to lend some support. Excuse me. Didn't get it yet. May come back for a sneeze. no sneezing, no sneezing. there is a new field of study. I'm actually reaching down to see if I have a bottle of water, because this may come back again. There's a new field of study that has been investigating some things and has amassed quite a bit of scientific evidence that there are mechanisms involved that can create adaptations of species outside of random mutations. And I had mentioned this 2 weeks ago, that I thought this would be like the next big thing. And when it was all said and done, we would find out that in fact, adaptation of the species is built right into the machine. Because this, from a design standpoint, seems to me something you would do as a designer. You would just build it right into the machine so that your newly created life that you've designed could survive under a variety of circumstances and not just be dependent on random mutations to hopefully come up with a solution that would be better than the status quo. Anyways, and as I said, I had heard about a study, but I didn't get it recorded and I didn't really write it down, so I didn't have the information. Well, a couple of weeks ago, my daughter, as I was over there chatting with them and working on a little project that I'm working on with her and her husband, she said, this is it. This is what you were talking about. And she handed me a Time magazine. And the Time magazine is on the field of epigenetics. It's called epigenetics. E-P-I-G-E-N-E-T-I-C-S, I think is the way it's spelled. Really interesting stuff. It certainly didn't start with this guy, but the featured guy in the article was a Dr. Lars Olaf Bygren, I think is his name. And several years ago, he had begun a study of some people in Sweden, I think. I'm driving, so I can't look at my notes. Some people in Sweden that lived in the Norrbotten. And I guess the Norrbotten is this county that is way up in the Arctic Circle. This thing is on the end of the world. Very isolated, harsh conditions. Literally, they go from feast to famine unpredictably. So 1 year, you might have a really harsh year, completely wipes out the crops. The next year, you might just have a bumper crop and just food coming out everywhere. And the people in this area, I guess, have a tendency that they're so happy when the crops are good that they just spend the winters eating. And they just gorge themselves because they don't know when it's coming back. Well, this Dr. Bygren knew, I'm opening my water bottle. This Dr. Bygren knew that a woman pregnant could affect her child, who was still in her womb, by her overeating. But he had this thought, I wonder if people gorging themselves or going through famine could affect their children and their grandchildren long before those children and grandchildren were ever born. Now, I would say, well, that's a whisper. Something gave him this idea. And he thought, that's kind of interesting. And so he began, with some associates, to meticulously gather information on death rates, on famines, on family trees, on when the abundance was, and began to assemble a lot of information and begin to map things out, and found a really interesting corollary. According to his research, in a statistically significant manner, people who gorged themselves over a given winter, when they would subsequently have children, those children and their children's children actually lived shorter than the average. Their lifespans were shortened. And when they corrected for socioeconomic status and all those type of things, if I recall correctly, the difference came out to decades. That when you tracked through the children and the grandchildren, that those grandchildren were actually dying on average decades earlier than the children who had been born to parents of that had gone through a time of famine. Now, this initially is heretical. This is not what people are expecting, because the prevailing school of thought up to this study of epigenetics was that you inherited your genetic material. Certainly what you did with your life in terms of your diet and exercise and the type of stressors that were in your life, certainly those affected you, but they certainly did not affect your children, and definitely did not affect your grandchildren, because you just pass on your genetics. They remain basically unchanged except for some random mutations, and ta-ta-da-ta-ta, there it is. Everybody starts with a clean slate. But in fact, this research seems to indicate that people don't start with a clean slate, that it is actually possible for environment to affect the expression of genes. One of the classic studies that I found in my research is a scientist who was dealing with mice, a specific breed of mice that have a genetic anomaly that turns on certain processes in their body such that their coats are yellow and they are obese for mice. They weigh twice as much as a normal mouse would weigh. And what this scientist found is that if he fed them a diet that was rich in vitamin B and folic acid and some of those types of things, that when those mice then had children, those children were brown and skinny, like normal mice. And yet when they compared the genetic code is identical. So they knew something was going on. In addition, those brown skinny mice could then be bred, and they end up with brown skinny mice. They wouldn't go back, as you would expect, or if it was only just genetic expression. In addition, there have been studies done that have shown that you can take a certain breed of fruit fly that has white eyes, and if during a critical time when those fruit flies are growing, you subject them to a certain level of heat, their eyes come out red. And when they're crossbred with regular fruit flies that have white eyes, a certain portion of them will have red eyes. It is an inheritable sequence. And this all has to do with epigenetics. What epigenetics is the understanding and the investigation of the fact that chemicals, certain molecular structures can attach to the DNA. And in the process of attaching to the DNA, they can actually switch the DNA on and off. So you can have these molecular tags that can attach to the DNA, turn it on, turn it off. You can have other types of molecular structures that can wrap around certain sections of DNA and clamp down on it and make sure that it doesn't get expressed. And these molecules and these structures are produced as a result of environmental pressures. And so you actually can have environmental stresses that then lead to some sort of change in the species and possibly an adaptation of a species. Now, I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't understand all this. What I do know is this is a brand new field of study, and there are a lot of really interesting stuff that's being done in it. I'm getting my mail. One moment. And nobody knows for sure at this point where all of this is going to lead. Now, I could give you a guess where this is going to lead. Where this is going to lead is by the time we get this all figured out as to what's going on, we are going to find out that not only did God design a system where he created these Hox genes, which are a body plan map that then flip things on and off and can take the same set of genes and instead of producing a fly, can produce a chicken, can produce a chimpanzee, can produce a human, and it's all built in from the beginning, that God also designed mechanisms that can allow whatever, a dog to adapt to a situation, that can allow rock pocket mice that we talked about a couple of weeks ago to go from being light-furred to dark-furred because of their environments, and that it all can happen much faster than the thousands and thousands and billions and millions and whatever number of years. I'm backing into my garage, and it's a little dark and rainy, and I hope I'm not going to hit something. One moment, and up and over. And what we're going to find is that this has all been built into the system. And that the system is specifically designed to provide this capability of adaptation. And while Lamarck, I need to straighten up my car, I'm not quite good. Try it one more time. While Lamarck may not have been right on target with giraffes stretching their necks and that led to more long-necked giraffes, at least his proposal that environmental stresses and pressures can lead to adaptations of the species was not that far off. So this is all going to be very interesting to watch how it all develops out. And I'll kind of keep my ear to the ground and see it. I'm in my garage so I can look at my notes. Some of the things that I found just interesting about this was that I was reading some quotes out of an article from a scientist, and it was what I had expected from the scientist. And if you'll remember from a couple of weeks ago, I feel like the approach that we need to take to all of this kind of information is to understand that it is the glory of God to hide a thing, and the glory of kings to seek it out. And that the scientists of our day are our kings, and we should honor them as such. And not get all bent out of shape if they seem stuck on certain patterns of philosophy or those type of things. That's fine, you know. If they're just dead set to prove that there is no God, just don't, let's not get bent out of shape about that. Let's just and keep encouraging them to do good science and keep saying, man, that's fascinating. That's cool. Keep looking. Because when it all comes around in the end, God will make himself known. And we don't need to get all bent out of shape if someone refuses to see that he's out there. Because it's not our job to chase after them. It's God's job because he loves them, and so he is going to chase after them and do everything he can to help them know him. And so it was interesting, this quote that came out of this. Oh, and the other thing I should say is there seems to be some discrepancy as to how inheritable this epigenetics is. I was reading one article that was just saying, yep, it's fully inheritable. Ta-da, there it is. And another one was saying, well, no, it's not quite that inheritable. I mean, it's probable that once you get several generations down that it begins to wear off or something, but I don't know. So that's kind of an open-ended thing. Here's the little end of an article that I read that I thought was interesting. Environmental factors which change the characteristics of an individual are then passed on to the offspring. But do these really fit into Darwin's theory of evolution? According to his theory, evolution is the result of population and not a single individual. Quote, passing on characteristics gained this way fits more to Lamarck's theory of evolution, says this scientist they were quoting. But then it has a little additional paragraph that says, however, this scientist still does not believe that Darwin's theory of evolution is put into question by the evidence of epigenetic research. Quote, Darwin was 100% right, the scientist emphasized. For him, epigenetics complements Darwin's theory. In his view, new characteristics are generated and passed on via epigenetics, subject to exactly the same mechanisms of evolution as those with a purely genetic origin. Okay, so you can see here how, even though we make what I consider to be a fairly profound shift, we change from it's random mutations that happen over millions of years based on an entire population to it's a structure inside an individual that individually responds to environmental stressors, and it can happen in like one generation. That's a huge change. But because of a philosophical bias, this scientist just goes, oh no, it's the same thing. Which, that's okay. That's really okay. All we need to just keep saying is, you know what? You're doing good work. Just keep working on it. Let's see what you come up with next week. One of the takeaways for me in all of this epigenetic research, and the scientist who did the study, the doctor who did the study in Sweden, he had a quote on the end of the NOVA program that I didn't record that I thought was pretty interesting. He said, before this study, he always considered his genetic code to just be something that he would pass on to his children. And after he had done this study, he said, I realized more that my genetic code is really something I'm entrusted with, and that I can actually alter that code by my lifestyle and my behavior. And if I'm not careful, I can alter that code in a way that is detrimental to my offspring. And I think that's an important thing for us to consider and an important thing for us to think about. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.